Hello everyone, Ali Glenn here for Living for the Weekend on University Radio Nottingham, and today I'm joined by frontwoman and songwriter for the Mysteries, Leah Metcalf. Leah, thank you for joining us. How are you doing this afternoon?
Hi Ali, I'm good thanks. How are you?
I am doing pretty well. I've been looking forward to doing this interview. And first of all, I'd like to congratulate you. Your band, obviously you're part of the Mysteries, your band's debut album, Reeling, was released earlier this year, and by all accounts, it has gone down very well. I certainly enjoyed it, and NME and Mojo and some DJs, particularly Steve Lamacq, agreeing with me, and it got top 10 in the album charts. So my first question is, how nerve-wracking for you was it to release the project into the world when it's sort of been your baby for however long, and how vindicating has it been to see it go down so well?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think because the amount of time we waited for it to be released, the nerves sort of passed, and it was more just like a relief that we had it out, because, you know, we wanted to sort of move away from previous projects, so we were just happy that everyone got to experience new music of ours, and the fact that everyone has enjoyed it, and, you know, people have got onto us more through the album, and the support we've received has been, you know, we're like super grateful for it, and it's not one that we expected, I guess.
So you recorded this album in fairly early lockdown, and it was done in a fairly short period of time. So how did you feel sort of not knowing how these songs would necessarily be performed live and how they go down a treat? Because I know a lot of bands sort of test drive their new songs to a live audience. Mm-hmm. So how difficult was it not necessarily being able to do that?
I think it was just a part of trusting ourselves and knowing what we wanted to create was something we all would feel comfortable doing live, and we enjoyed playing live, and something that we would be proud of. So I guess we didn't really think about it, because, you know, it was sort of uncertain as to when live was even going to return. It was sort of out the picture, really. And when it came back and we were able to play live, we just had to sort of relearn the songs. But I suppose that process in itself was quite interesting, because it allowed the songs to take on another form, and one that we'd never really experienced other than being live in the studio. But, you know, that's so different to live with audiences. So I guess it was just, it was a bit of a backwards way to do it, but one that seemed to work for us.
Yeah, and all the songs sort of, despite this in a sort of ironic way, all the songs sound like they wanted to capture that live feel as much as possible, which I very much appreciate about the album.
Yeah, definitely. Well, our producer, Catherine Marks, wanted to record the record live, so I guess we weren't too scared about playing it live because we'd recorded it live. But, you know, certain songs did take on a different character, I suppose, when we did do it in front of audiences, especially off the back of the last tour. So, I mean, that was really fun.
That's good to hear. I did actually want to ask you about working with Catherine Marks, because she's produced some of my favourite artists. In fact, she's produced a Frank Turner album, a Big Moon album. And so I wanted to ask, how did she help bring your vision to life for this album from what you were sort of aiming for when you were writing them?
She just, she completely supported what we were doing and believed in it. And she really loved the songs, which, you know, I know it sounds stupid, but it definitely helps when your producer likes your music. I think you can tell a difference in terms of them wanting to go with your direction rather than, you know, battling with their own perspective. Yeah, she was incredible to work with, and the record wouldn't sound the way it does without her at all. She put a lot of magic into that record.
All of the records that I've heard that she's on sound so clean and so, like, they're envisioned of what the artist does. And, like, I was reading how on the song Dangerous in particular, you guys were sort of struggling to coax out the essence that you sort of wanted from it. Did she help with that track massively in sort of that way in achieving that goal?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's weird because with Dangerous, we like had it, like me and Cal, Cal wrote the riff and then I wrote the melody over it, the words. And then we sort of took it to the band and we were going to the studio like not too long after demoing it. So Paul and George hadn't even heard the song. and we demoed it in the same day that they'd heard it. So the demo had this sort of magic to it, and we wanted to recreate that. And I think everyone just got so caught up in that. That's why it became difficult, because, you know, Catherine wanted to kind of give it a new edge or a new lease of life. And we were sort of conflicted because we loved the demo so much. We did try like so many different things with Dangerous. Like we tried, it sped up really fast. Like Catherine just wanted to see what it was like super fast. And that sounded pretty weird. And then we just like tried different things, and then we went back to what the demo sounds like. And then she sort of, every little idea that she put into it, like speeding it up, you know, dropping guitars out, adding guitars, that all sort of fell into one place over the basis of what the demo was. So it become like this like hybrid almost of, you know, both of the versions of the song, and it sort of fell into place. But it did take quite a bit of time. Dangerous, I think it was probably one of the only times we sort of conflicted with Catherine, not negatively, but just because we were so attached to the demo.
That's fair enough. And it's probably one of my favorite tracks on the album, so I think it all paid off in the end. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, congratulations, I guess.
Thank you.
My favorite song, I think, of the album as a whole is Old Friends Die Hard. And I wanted to ask about that song in particular, mm-hmm. because it's so much fun, especially like the little interlude you do where it's sort of introduces the song after the first verse. How did that song come about? Because it almost sounds like you were just throwing every idea under the sun and just having it work out that way.
Yeah, I've had that song for a while, and no one really knew if it was going to be on the record because it was an acoustic song, and I wanted to try it with the band. So we did, and then we all enjoyed playing it. But there was, you know, a bit of resistance against that song. Like some people didn't want it on the record, not within the band. But I was pretty set and I wanted it on there because I love the tone of the song and like the words. I think, like you said, it's a pretty fun song and it's meant to be funny and show a humorous side to the record. So obviously it ended up on the record. So we demoed it, and that interlude that is at the start, me and Paul were just pretty drunk basically, and we were just like throwing weird stuff all over the song. There's loads of weird stuff in it, like really low in the mix. I think at one point, I don't know if you can even hear it, to be honest, but I can hear it because I know it's there. I think I say like "Bee Bopalula, She's My Baby" like in the background really quietly. So I don't know if anyone else can hear it, but yeah, I know it's there. So sometimes I can hear it.
I'm going to listen out for that now. Is that the John Lennon track? Or I can't remember if it was a cover originally or something like that.
It's, yeah, and it's just like a phrase that was used quite a lot. Like Dire Straits use it in Walk of Life, I think. It's been used quite a lot. It's quite like a early pop music phrase, I suppose. But yeah, I think I put that in somewhere.
That's a little Easter egg if anyone listening wants to try and pick that one out. Obviously, before releasing Reeling, Reeling was your debut LP, but you did have a couple of EPs out before that. You had the Love's Not Enough EP, which was where I first came across you guys, and the Take Control EP. And what I wanted to ask related to that, how different was the sort of creative process in creating that album? So I guess, did you think more about Reeling's narrative relative to those two EPs?
Yeah, definitely. Like I was like older as well, and I just matured in every sense, like creatively. I matured in terms of what I wanted to say, you know, the type of artist I wanted to be portrayed as. Again, I decided the narrative for the record, and I listened to a lot more music at that point. And obviously we had a completely different like setup within the band. We were like a four piece. We were no longer working with the previous producer. So a lot of limitations that I felt like I come across in the early years were sort of eradicated, and I just sort of felt like I could do whatever I wanted. And then I was sort of blessed with lockdown to just write, which was, you know, a bit of a freak accident really. it was timed very well.
I always find it interesting how a lot of the time sort of lockdowns come as a blessing in disguise for some artists. And it's interesting to hear that you're no different. Did that sort of experience with, I know you were making a very conscious effort to listen to new music. So I guess what music were you listening to at the time of the album sort of construction? I know the album's been constructed over years, but in the, I guess, creative process. And like, what music are you listening to now in comparison?
I suppose the music we listened to around the record, I moved out like in lockdown on my own, and I had no like internet or phone. So I only had my records, basically. And then I had lots of like Tom Waits records, so I listened to them a lot. I listened to a lot of Nick Cave, PJ Harvey. I listened to a lot of The Doors, a lot of Bob Dylan. Just stuff I'd probably listened to for years, but because there was so much time to do nothing, I listened to the records differently, I guess, because I connected them deeper because it was just me on my own, like, listening to them. And like the stuff we're listening to now, I'm listening to a lot of Sparkle Horse at the moment. Like, I'm really enjoying them. The new band, Wonder Horse, they're pretty good.
I love Wonder Horse. I love Teal. It's one of my favourite songs at the moment.
Yeah, Teal's a beautiful song. I think it's one of the, for me, like, that's one of the best songs I've heard for a very, very long time in terms of songwriting as well. Like, the lyrics are just...
I agree, yeah. It's brilliant.
Amazing. So, yeah, I'm digging them at the moment. And Sparkle Horse, they're, like, a band from the 90s. I'd check them out as well, but, you know, they're good. I like them a lot.
I was really happy you said Wonder Horse because they're absolutely ace. And funnily enough, that leads us quite well on to my next sort of set of questions, because I first discovered Wonder Horse at a Nottingham festival, literally in my first week of university here. And it was a Dot to Dot festival, I believe. And we're here today. We're here today, obviously, to be talking about how you're playing another festival, an outdoor festival this time in Nottingham. So Meadowlands Festival is coming up on the 3rd of June, at least in my time, certainly. It's the first outdoor event in the city. What do you think sort of outdoor festivals can sort of add to a city's music scene like this? And it's a sort of day thing. I guess, how does it contribute and how does it enrich the city for you?
I mean, I prefer outdoor festivals, to be honest. Like, when they sort of did that thing a few years ago where, you know, they were in multiple venues. I mean, I completely get it because, you know, you want to give different venues an opportunity to be used. And because of the situation of the government and all that, a lot of venues are closing down. So I do get the positive side, but, you know, you can't really beat an outdoor festival. Like, there's a certain vibe to it that they can't really create in venues that are inside, because, you know, they're seen as gigs. Festivals, like, especially outdoor ones that you said, they just, people connect like deeper when they're outside. I don't know, like, yeah, I feel like the outdoor festivals are a lot more of an experience.
I think they have their pros and cons. As a festival, I think outdoors better, because I also think there's this sort of element of you have to try and convince the audience to do it. It's sort of, if you're not like a headliner, you have more of an opportunity to put people onto you with your performances outdoors, I find more.
Yeah, definitely.
What do you make of the other artists playing on there? Are there any in particular that you're quite excited to share a stage with or see?
There's a few like people on there. I mean, we're good friends of Zuzu, so we definitely go and watch Zuzu. She's pretty cool. My good friends are Black Honey as well, so we probably watch them. Yeah, it'll be good. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Obviously, you've played Nottingham quite a few times before, most notably supporting the Amazons. I think you had a headline show at Bodega. Is that correct?
Yes, we did. We did, actually. That was before lockdown, I think.
Fairly typical of Bodega. They're sort of, if you want to go to somewhere in the city to know what the biggest band in two years' time is going to be, that's where you go. Do you have any sort of memories of these gigs in particular that you'd like to share?
I'm not sure. I mean, I love Nottingham. Like, Nottingham is such a good city. I think it's beautiful. We always have a good gig there, and people are definitely a lot more stuck into the music scene, I think. Like, out of all the cities, that's probably one of the main ones that, you know, we enjoy going to. I'm trying to think, where else have we played in Nottingham?
I believe you did a Rough Trade in store. I'm pretty sure one of my mates went to that.
Oh, yeah, we did, actually. yeah, that was a cool rough trade. I mean, if it's got a rough trade, then it's a good city, isn't it?
Yeah, I was genuinely, when I was looking at cities to go to universities in, it was like, it did basically come down to Nottingham has a rough trade.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't necessarily tell my parents I said that, but you know. I was about to ask what you make of music, Nottingham as a music city generally, but it seems that it's quite a positive response.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess for my final question, I'm going to ask sort of about radio in general. Obviously, we are a student radio station and we like to take pride in trying to discover up and coming bands such as yourself. Funnily enough, I actually discovered you guys from hearing, I believe, Love's Not Enough on BBC Radio 6 Music.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I got to play quite a bit there.
So my thought was, what role do you think radio plays for up and coming bands in the sort of changing post-COVID music industry as it's sort of evolving?
I think radio is important. Like, it's always been important and it always will be. A lot of well-respected people throughout history who, you know, were radio DJs, and a lot of our success, like, and where we are now is to do with Steve Lamacq, who like completely backed us up from the beginning, like day one. You know, we even like gave him a thanks on the back of the record because of how much he's helped. And he's such a, you know, he's like a real muso and loves music and he loves art and he loves sharing it with people. And it's so important that we like keep sharing things, especially art, with people, because, you know, we don't have to agree on everything in life, but the one things that people connect deep on are things like art and music and film and food and, you know, passions that can be shared. So radio is basically that, like, in black and white, it is to share music from one person to the masses. So in that respect, it's super important. When you look at the likes of like John Peel, Steve Lamacq, Annie Mac, these people are like almost pioneers of music, and a lot of bands wouldn't have got the success that they did without these people. So radio is super important, and, you know, Steve Lamacq is a very good friend of ours, and yeah, we owe a lot to him and Radio 6 team.
I've got to say, I agree wholeheartedly, even just as a sort of listener to Radio 6, the three DJs that you listed off there are somewhat like heroes of mine, so it's,
yeah,
I can't agree more. And on that note, I'd like to thank you for sharing your time with us this
it's
afternoon.
Okay, Ali, thanks for being patient before.
It's no worries, it well worth the wait. Well worth the wait. So thank you once again, Leah, and everyone listening in, I'm sure will appreciate that. Keep listening to your own.